her a very loud Social Media Strategy Summit welcome to Stacey Jaffe, please.
Good morning, everybody. Should I break out my Beyonce moves this morning? Rev up the crowd. Hi, everybody. I feel you on that excitement level. It's early. We need some more coffee, right? Nice to meet you. All right. I am Stacey Jaffe. I am the Vice President of Digital Content and Channels at Teach for America. And my job is to digitally transform the organization so that we interact with our constituents in a user-first way. So that rather than doing a lot of broadcasting to them, we are doing a lot of one-on-one communication. So very much what we've been talking about. And I was put into this role to transform the organization to do exactly that. And in my role, I have two big goals I'm responsible for delivering on. First and foremost, I'm responsible for strengthening the affiliation amongst our 56,000 alumni and core members. So those are people who have spent 2 years teaching in a low-income classroom in a high-needs urban or rural environment. And teaching for us is an act of leadership. It's a cataclysmic experience, and you go on to, from that experience, to fight educational inequity from the rest of your life in any sector from which you choose to lead. And it is my job to rally these individuals into a community and to get engagement and commitment from them. That is my first goal. And my second goal is to rally the next generation of leaders to sign up to be part of our core program and to lead a classroom for us for the next 2 years of their lives. So we are very much targeting millennials, people who grew up with internet in their home, who think very differently than perhaps my C-suite thinks, as we learned from Maddie B this morning. And I have huge numbers I'm responsible for bringing in digitally in terms of leaders. So of the entire group of teachers that we will have for next year, 25% will be recruited digitally and through my team. So that is really where I'm on the hook for, which is a little different, I think, than other nonprofits who are on the hook for donations. I'm on the hook for recruitment. And our digital paid ads program is a huge portion of that, naturally. So I'm going to talk to you about that, and I'm going to talk to you about the case study that we did for that today. And I do all of that through iteration, endless iteration. I'm known on my team for saying that your audience always knows what they always want. If you've ever heard your audience never knows what they want, I think that's such a fallacy. I've never believed it. Your audience always knows what your audience wants, and you get there through listening. So the likes, the comments, the shares, the conversions, that's all of your audience talking to you. They're data points in your focus group. Social media is a giant focus group. Your audience is consistently telling you what they do and do not like. And if you use your data well, if you hone in on your data in conjunction with some of the more classic forms of listening, you're going to get to exactly the content that will perform well and will help you deliver on the goals that your bosses are expecting. So how exactly do we do that? This is how we do that on my team. So we call this our content loop at Teach for America. So the North Star is, for us, our mission. So our mission to eliminate educational inequity. So we enlist, mobilize, and develop leaders in this fight. That's our mission. I'm sure that your brand has a mission or a purpose at the center. Everything that we do, that has to be the centrifugal force of it, right? So everything is spinning around that. The very first thing we do then is to listen. What are we hearing out there on the internet? What do we know to be true for our audience? And it's more important that it's true for your audience than it's true for the internet at large, or you're not going to get anywhere that you want to go. Okay? From that, we create a piece of content. Okay, we've all done that a million times. We publish it. If we're talking about something that's going into the paid ads realm, publishing it would also be amplifying it or paying for it. And then that stage, we would really get into targeting it for the correct audience, making sure we hit our targeting goals. After that, we analyze our data and figure out how we performed and did it meet our goals, yes or no, why or why not. We go back to listening. What did we learn from that? What are our insights? How does that insight make us want to iterate our content? And we go back to creating. So sometimes, if this is a large campaign, that might be a really slow spin. Sometimes it's a really fast spin. If we're running an A/B test on an ad, we could have our answer in 24 hours, depending on how quickly there was reach. So depending on what you're doing, this may spin. The speed at which this cycle may spin will change, but it is always the same cycle. So listen and iterate, create, publish, analyze, listen, iterate, create again. Round and round we go. It is incredibly important, if you're going to create content for any audience, that you know that audience. So there's two ways in which you know your audience. One is sort of the classic studies that we always talk about. It's your user personas. It's your, what do we know to be true? This is a, I'm targeting a college-age millennial. I know that before they are willing to talk to me or engage with me directly, they have done their homework, right? They've stalked me on Google. They've looked at all my profiles. They know something before they're going to sit down and talk with a recruiter live in person, right? They've all done their homework. Those are the user personas. What do we know to be true about this type of person? We've done our UX testing. We've done our focus groups. That's all your classic listening. And then there's your real-time listening, right? It's your social listening. It's your DigiMind type work that we just heard. Teach for America uses Social Studio, which was formerly known as Radiant 6, to keep up in real time. What are people saying about our brand? It is also the stalking that you might do on Reddit. My best piece of content ever came from spying in the Reddit subthread on teachers. And teachers were talking about how hard November is. That November feels like a doldrum stage because you're coming up on Thanksgiving and you haven't made as much progress as you were hoping to, and you want to make so much more progress and you're starting to really feel it and you're starting to feel a little bit ready for a break, and then you realize that you've actually done more than you thought. And that whole idea came from listening in Reddit and reading what thousands upon thousands of teachers were organically talking about. So there's endless information out there if you go seeking it. All right. So after you've listened, you have to figure out how your audience wants to be treated. So we all know the golden rule, treat others the way you want to be treated, except if we really listened well to Maddie B this morning, we could really miss the mark on that, right? Because I didn't grow up with the internet at home because I'm not a millennial, but my audience who did grow up with the internet at home wants to be treated very differently than I would want to be treated. So if we're following the golden rule and treating others the way we want to be treated, we're probably not talking to our audience correctly. So we want to be following the platinum rule, treat others the way they want to be treated. And this goes right back to what we were just talking about in terms of knowing your audience, really stalking them, listening to them, paying attention to how they're talking to themselves in the Reddit subthreads, paying attention to how they're talking to you when they're engaging with your brand, paying attention to what they tell you in your focus groups. Okay? So you know how they want to be treated because you've, one, already done your listening, and then, two, you're going to do your A-B testing. And now we're going to get into the fun of what are we doing here. All right, so I had the curious incident of Stacy in the nighttime last year. I was telling Ryan earlier I'm a big book club nerd. He left that out and decided to focus on my Beyonce dance moves instead. But I don't know why you would ever pick that. Has anybody ever been through a brand refresh while you were the one in seat responsible for all of your ads? Yeah, so Teach for America was going through a bit of a brand refresh last year, really honing how do we talk about our mission in a way that clarified and simplified all the nuanced details of getting into inequity. And then at the same time, I ran into this other problem in that I was targeting 18 to 22-year-olds in an election year. And it was not the Russians. Unfortunately, I would love to say it was the Russians. But all of my baseline measures for what I thought an ad should cost changed, right? Because so many people were targeting 18 to 22-year-olds in an election year that all of my data got a little wonky last year. I would get ads out there. My A-B testing would go great. I would slightly iterate. I would go back to the starting line. It was like three steps forward, one step back, four steps forward, two steps back, on and on almost all year. My season almost nicely overlapped exactly with the election season for when we heavily recruit and when our application is open. So here I found myself at the beginning of this season with a refreshed brand and finally, luckily, out of the election year. So I am a little bit taking my methodology back to square one, and I thought I would walk you through how I'm doing that live this morning. Our application season started August 1st. And I'm going to walk you through what I've learned so far this year in real time, so that you can see, A, you can learn from what I learned and not have to learn it yourself, and B, you can see how we actually run our content loop. So I'll give you a real-time example here. All right, so I'm a huge believer in the scientific method. My nerdiness of book club goes right over to my nerdiness of running the team. And before we launch any piece of content I make, any member of my team state their hypothesis about how the content will perform. Because if you say it out loud, you have a theory about it, and you're looking for a measurement of success. So So, again, I was in a really curious situation at the start of the season. So my hypothesis was, if we start this year's recruitment season by slightly iterating the content that performed best last year, then we should be able to mimic last year's results with this year's campaign. And I wanted to start there as a place to iterate moving forward. So best performance for me means that that particular piece of content resulted in an application from a candidate that we would mark as qualified down the line. So not just any old application, not from somebody who just applied for the fun of it because they were applying to everything under the sun because they needed to get out of their current situation, but somebody who we would mark as highly likely to get into Teach for America that we would make an offer to. So it would result in a qualified candidate. So 20%, it turned out last year, of folks that came through digital channels and turned out to be qualified candidates had interacted with a piece of content we had made called What to Expect from the Application Process. It was a blog, very tactical. Actually, a lot of our analysis showed that what people were interacting with most tended to be tactical, and I would encourage you to look at where you are in your funnel, whether it's the inspirational stuff that gets people to the top of the funnel, or if what seals your deal is the tactical stuff. We were finding that the tactical stuff was sealing our deal. So Teach for America is a big commitment. We're asking millennials to spend 2 years of their lives with us. So wanting to know what you expect, it makes a lot of sense, right? There's a one-to-one there. So we wanted to start with getting people to this blog, and then from the blog, we knew they would go directly to the application and apply. And what I wanted to do was set up it as an A-B test of the platform. So I wanted to put the ad across multiple Facebook platforms to see where on the platform my audience was hanging out, because last year I was struggling to get traction. It was all over the place and really spotty. And I wasn't sure why it was spotty and thought, my best guess in analyzing everything last year was that the elections and all the different ads just made the market weird. So we put this exact ad out in Facebook right column, Facebook desktop, Facebook mobile, Facebook audience networks, Facebook Messenger, Instagram, right? We just dropped it everywhere. A little bit of throwing spaghetti at the wall, and normally I'm not in favor of that because I think your variables start to get a little wonky, but sometimes I think it's okay with a really small budget. So we did that. We threw a little spaghetti at the wall. I don't do that unless you can measure it, though, right? Can we measure it? Yes, we can. I'm not a fan, necessarily, of measuring it with small, what I would call performance indicators. For me, it's all about your key performance indicators. So for me, best results were qualified candidates. It's not, did I get a lot of clicks on Facebook? Did this get a lot of likes? Did this get a lot of shares? Like, my C-suite doesn't know how to work their way through likes, comments, or shares on Facebook, but they know what the business results of a qualified candidate are. So kind of like Bob the Builder, can we build it? Yes, we can. If I can't measure it, I don't do it. Can we measure it? Yes, we can. I measure it with UTM parameters in Google Analytics because Google Analytics tracks our application. So I don't measure it on the Facebook network, and I measure it. I use ad content tags to get it down to every singular ad unit. So I can go back to every single ad I played out there and tell you exactly how that individual ad performed. And in my ad content tags for this one, I used, you can't see it here, and I think I actually grabbed the wrong UTM parameters when I was debating the example I was going to show you. But for this one, I actually used ad content tags that showed you where I placed it, device placement, so I could really see, did a Messenger ad result in qualified candidates more than an Instagram ad, more than a right column ad? So I really wanted to know not only where was my audience hanging out, but where were they likely to interact with content like this. All right, so what did I find? Thank goodness. So last year I was all over the map. The year before that, I was solidly winning in right column, Facebook desktop and mobile newsfeed, and Instagram. Solidly winning all the time. I could always guarantee a win in those four spots. This year, I was winning in Facebook mobile newsfeed and Facebook Messenger. Instagram tanked. And Facebook right column tank, surprisingly, because Facebook right column used to be actually one of my best bets. So really interesting finding. It's why it's worth testing over and over again, because every time that algorithm changes, your ads are going to change. So I was really glad I actually put this test out into the market. This ad, by the way, brought in more qualified candidates than the same ad last year at the same time. So I'm like, all right, we're cooking. I figured out what I wanted to figure out. I now know, A, where my audience is hanging out, at least for this ad. They're going to respond to ads of this type in those places. And I knew I could get in more qualified candidates. So we were off to the races there. So how would I iterate that hypothesis? Because the whole point of stating your hypothesis at the top was being able to get to how could you iterate it when you moved forward. All right, so one thing I would want to know is, with a different type of ad, can I replicate the same placements? Are those the right placements for Teach for America ads overall? And two, I would want to look at probably image in that ad, and I would probably look at copy. That ad sort of conflated two ideas. It conflated what can you expect and the idea that the application was open. So those two ideas going at once, I'd wonder if you separated the ideas, if it was still as strong. So just a couple ideas of where I would have gone in the future. All right, so here we are. Here's my next one, my new hypothesis, right? Going back to let's work off of our best content. Some of our other best content was like, hey, it's time for a deadline, right? Like those tent poles, urgency, it always works for us. Urgency has worked since Facebook started. It has continued to work for me to this day. If you've got a deadline approaching, go for it, right? Or a date. A date always works in your favor. So my hypothesis for this one was if we use our best content, which was three tips for your application and the urgency of a deadline, then we can compel more of our audience to sign up. All right, I'm gonna just not make you go through a bunch of slides about how this one performed. It failed. It totally failed. And I was a little surprised because deadline content historically has performed really well. So I started looking at why do I think this one failed so miserably, and I have two thoughts on why I think it failed so miserably. One, I think the image is probably not our prettiest image ever. The yellow, interestingly, is really on brand for us at the moment, but I started looking around at all my other social channels, my own channels, and started noticing that where we had a white background, the images were getting a lot of organic engagement, and where we had a yellow background, there was less organic engagement. So just in transferring thoughts from channel to channel, I thought maybe there's something to this yellow not working in our favor. And two, I think there's too much text. And I think if you look at how Facebook takes up text, that 9.13.17 in the Teach for America logo actually takes up to 20% of text. We put it in the Facebook grid to double check for that. But I think when Facebook ran it through the, when Facebook itself did the calculation of it, it counted the pencil as text. So I think Facebook thought that this had more than 20% text and limited its reach. But my hypothesis moving forward was we have to change the image if we put this ad out again. So we put this out ahead of our first deadline, which was September 13th. This is the image we put out for October 18th, which was Wednesday. I peaked this morning. With the exact same budget, we had double the clicks through to the website. And we had a 40% increase in applications. I don't yet know how that turned out in qualified candidates because this ended at midnight last night, but I'm feeling better about it. So we changed the image. And we iterated, and we moved it forward. So again, that loop, over and over again, you stick to that loop, and you keep moving forward, and you make tiny improvements, and tiny improvements bring big differences. Double the clicks, 40% increase in applications. It wouldn't seem like it'd be a big deal, but it is. So your methodology matters, right? I'm obsessed with hypotheses. I'm obsessed with stating them out loud because you know what you're gunning for, and I'm obsessed with thinking about have you followed the loop of iterations, right? Where are you in your content loop? Because then you can start carrying things from one platform to another. So if you're going to transfer learnings on one platform to a learning on another platform, and I've hinted at this a little bit when I started talking about that yellow background when I wasn't so sure how that was going, I think there's two things that's really important. One, you have to go back to your listening. What do you know about your audience? What do you know to be true? And two, you have to really heavily consider the platform and what your audience expects of that platform. And then, especially if you're in the paid world, how similar the targeting features of that platform are. So an interesting example, earlier this week, I had just found that I had reached my personal saturation point with the news, and I went to look at Facebook just to like sort of enjoy my happy place. Social media is my happy place. When I got home in the evening after work, and it was the day that women were talking about whether or not they had been sexually harassed, and the Me Too was really trending on Facebook. And I got about 4 Facebook posts down before I decided I really just, it was too much for me, and I closed Facebook and I switched to Instagram because I wanted to look at happy pictures because I was personally ready to relax, right? So if you imagine that I was your customer that day and you were trying to get an ad in front of me, I didn't actually get far enough in Facebook's newsfeed to see any ads before I switched to Instagram, right? So like you really have to know your platform, know why your users pick certain platforms, know what they're expecting to see on that platform, and make sure that what you put on that platform works for why they would open that app to begin with before you decide if you're transferring content from platform to platform, right? It really matters when you think that through. So just because it works on Facebook and you have good finance on Facebook doesn't mean it's gonna work on Instagram. You really have to think if that insight transfers. But where you have a great insight, if it works with that idea that it will transfer, it probably will. So I'm going to talk to you about some things we've transferred and where we've learned that. All right. When we transfer insights, we always go back to our content loop, right? And it starts with the listening. And in this one, again, just to my earlier point, that listening for us involves that stage of, does it work on this platform too? So like we know it worked on Facebook, now we want to take it to Twitter. If we think about how Twitter works, if we think about what we know to be true of our audience on Twitter, does it work here? Create, publish, analyze, and iterate. All right, so this is one of our most popular Instagrams from very early in the season. And I was speaking to our recruitment team, so that's a team of people who work on college campuses across the country, and they said that they were really having a lot of conversations with people they were recruiting at the moment, and the thing that they were recognizing was really making the difference in getting submitted applications was this idea of you will be personally transformed by the experience. And that clearly made a difference in their conversation. And I started realizing that's not anything we were doing digitally. We weren't really harping on that message digitally. We were really doing it. I told you earlier we were using a lot of tactile messages. So I went back through our content. Had we gotten that message out anywhere in a way in which it worked well? And in one of our earlier Instagrams we had, we were just about to launch content for email. Email is one of my second biggest performers moving forward. So I'm going to just give people a second. I see a couple photos going. So my hypothesis here was if the notion of personal transformation worked well in a quote format, we could transfer this quote format to an email campaign and see an increase in conversion rates from email. This is the email that went out a week ago. And you can see that is the same exact quote. It just has a slightly different treatment. So that it worked in the email copy. We saw a 6% increase in applications at our second deadline with this quote in the email over what we saw at our first deadline in September. And again, it's because we worked with that listening that was happening real time on the ground with another team in-house. So again, utilizing your resources, but it went back to listening, right? Like my listening happened in talking to another team in that instance rather than listening happening on the internet, but we took the listening from the other team to the listening on the internet and Instagram, transitioned it to email, created the content, spun it around, 6% increase in applications. All right, similarly, I have a lead gen landing page for my search ads that was performing pretty poorly. So I started to think, what could I do to get this lead gen ad to perform better? I'd already done all your classic A-B testing of moving the form and changing the headline and changing the color of the button and like all the stuff we've all done that we all know to do. And it dawned on me in looking through my metrics that ultimately at Teach for America, you're asking people to apply for a job. It's a 2-year job. And one of my best performing pieces of content is a sponsored job post on Instagram, right? And it looks like a job listing. Right, like it has all your requirements and that type of thing. And I thought to myself, why don't I try that as a landing page after a search ad? Maybe it would make a difference. So I did. It's the world's longest landing page. I actually had to take 3 screenshots and put it on top of it to show it to you. Okay, we had a nice picture at the top, and there you go. It's your classic job application with a pretty long, actually, form at the bottom, right? This doesn't even appear to be the most mobile-friendly form, right? Okay. This took my conversion rate on my landing page from 3.14% to 6.66%. So huge increase, and the idea being, if it wasn't working for me, let me try something really wacky out of the box that was working for me really well. So then I thought to myself, okay, I'm breaking all the rules here. Like, I got my form way below the fold. We all know you keep your form above the fold, right? Like, 101. So we ran an A-B test and put the form back up above the fold, and my conversion rate went from 6.6% back down to 3%. I go, all right, learned my lesson. Putting my form back down under the fold. It's clearly working for me. People clearly needed all the information. They wanted to read it before they filled out the form, the people that were going to fill out the form. So the moral of the story is to always be A-B testing and to test your hypotheses, because if you can state that hypothesis out loud, you can get to a really good result. Which brings us right back to that spaghetti I had thrown up at the wall at the beginning of the season when I was desperate for a placement. This ad had sort of been bothering me since I did it, despite the fact that I got slightly better results for it, because as somebody who came up in the world through data, I got multiple variables going here, and it kind of feels a little icky, right? Like, I'm conflating the application being open with what you can expect. And I got away with it, I think, because it was slightly better than what we did last year. But in my mind, this is not a great ad. So seeing a lift on it, okay, good. But, like, I can do better. I know I can do better. So I wanted to test if we emphasized the deadline or if we emphasized expectations, which would do better. But I wanted to keep most of the other variables the same because I had a baseline going. I knew how much this could produce. So in a slightly messy way, I changed the headline here but kept all the other data on it mostly the same. Right, so you can see it's our next deadline versus what to expect when you apply. And I put it out against each other with really only changing the headline. Does anyone want to take a guess at what they thought won here? Nobody wants to guess. All right, I'm going to go ahead and just tell you. The straight call to apply, the next deadline, did it. And interestingly, it did it on October 1st, which really stunned me because I thought being 18 days away from a deadline would be not a draw. Like, there would be no urgency in getting an application. So really interesting that the deadline content really piqued people's interest, and I think that might speak to where people are in the funnel and my targeting, so that's actually going to be my next test. I'm going to lean in a little harder on targeting. So, right, round and round you go. Why do you think people are doing that? What would you test next? All right. So the other piece of content in here, right, when we go back to where were all of your qualified candidates coming from, hidden in this ad, actually hidden back in that black pencil ad, if I go back a few pages, there are three tips for applying. There's actually three do's and three don'ts, which is a piece of content that we know dramatically converts applicants, that folks that read this content are ready to apply, and they convert quickly after engaging with it. But what we can't figure out how to do is how to get it out there in a way that's going to get us people to see the ad and convert. So what we're doing right now is putting it out organically on Twitter in a variety of different ways to test ad copy for free. I don't know if you guys have ever done this. But we know that our Twitter audience is pretty similar to our Facebook ad audience through a lot of our A-B testing. So if you were to scan through our Twitter feed right now, you would probably see multiple iterations of the three tips. It would look pretty similar to this. And what we're doing is looking to see not only which gets the best engagement on Twitter, but also who clicks through and where we get organic applications from that are also qualified, because that will tell us that we got the copyright, and we will take that copy and translate it to ads elsewhere. So we're running a few small tests on Twitter, trying to hone in on what's going to be right, and we will then translate that elsewhere while we have other ad buys going to similarly targeted markets on Facebook. So it's a way to do some other simultaneously testing in slightly the same demographic on a different channel. So if you're worried about double targeting people, you can possibly use a second channel to get you there. All right, which brings us right back to the content loop, right? Start with your hypothesis, which should probably be up there right at the top of my pen, first arrow pointing to the top. Listen, create, publish, analyze, and iterate. Listen again, and then go right back to create. And with that, I have time for questions if anybody would like to ask any.
Thank you. Here you go.
Hello. I'm curious about how you pull from Facebook the placement data into Google Analytics and how you can see that. I don't know if it's separate ad sets targeting different placements and that's how you can tell. If you could explain that a little bit.
So the way in which we did that was we, exactly as you described. Oh, I stepped away from the microphone. I'm so sorry about that. Okay, so what we did was, it took a lot longer to set it up, but we basically set up a different UTM parameter for every single placement we wanted to set, and we set up one overarching campaign and an individual ad set for every individual placement so that the UTM parameter would link back to the placement. Does that make sense? Yeah, so instead of having multiple ads, we had multiple ad sets.
What other questions for Stacy? I think this is awesome that we have a data nut in the house. Seriously. We have like 10 minutes for questions. Not all at once. Come on, you guys. You got this. No questions?
I think you got one in the front.
Oh, thank you.
Hi. I'm wondering how often you choose to promote your actual content on your page versus creating ads for Facebook and how you make that decision process.
Great question. At the moment, I am mostly defaulting to ads because of the ability to target and get exactly who I want and knowing exactly who that's going to and knowing the ROI it will come to. And that is because I have... We have figured out with immense sophistication how to target our ads and get it in front of people who become qualified candidates, and we've done it through our listening and by combining our data with our qualitative. I don't typically promote content on the page because the number of followers on our page, the demographics of the followers on our page are different than the demographics of who I'd want to target the ads to. So we're in a little bit, and this comes back to the brand refresh we were going, I was speaking to earlier. So when I look at the demographics for our page overall, it's a little bit off from the demographics of who I'd want to target. So if I promote the page content, my hypothesis is I'm not reaching the right people to lead me to qualified candidates. So one of the things that I'm going to that I work a lot on, and one of the measures of success I look for in the ads is, did the ads bring, because I know the ads are targeting who I want, do they also bring page follows? And then in my strategy for this year, it's mapped into my roadmap to start building in more promoted content on the page to bulk up the page. So I think I would probably, however, if I were doing a ratio, it probably works out to like 80% ads, 20% page promotion. I think what you're probably getting at is, or like my overarching hypothesis about Facebook and being a brand on Facebook these days is that Facebook is now a paid and earned space and it's no longer an owned medium. So I think the real question is, what are you doing to earn content on Facebook and what are you doing to pay for content on Facebook? And I think the owned space, you still have to be very smart and very clever because your paid content funnels right into your owned. And I think if you really watch your paid metrics, where you really hit an ad right, you see a really high correlation between like that ad was awesome and people followed your page. So you don't want those followers that you just ran one brand affinity for to not like your own content. So I think you still have to do owned very well, but it's really a stomping ground for paid and earned. Does that make sense? Okay, you're nodding yes, yeah. Do other people have that same hypothesis? Like they're sort of watching Facebook become paid and earned?
Kind of going off of that one, I was curious as you do your ads and you're looking to see what demographics those reach, do you worry about the feed of Facebook then looking like disconnected where you have ads and then you have other content, or is that not really a concern when you're trying to meet the needs of those ads?
I don't worry about that because my own channel, the content on the own channel very closely mirrors the content we're putting out in ads, and the content on the own channel is meant for the same demographic as the ad content. So if you go and look at Teach for America's Facebook page right now, it looks very much like the ads I just showed you. So the ads fit dramatically into that. Where we're struggling on the owned front is with engagement. So if you were to look at engagement on the page, and that's because of the demographic issue. So now the question is, as we've done a brand refresh, as we've re-looked at our demographics, as we've gotten much more strategic, how do we re-hone the demographics of our Facebook page that has been organically won over 8 years of having a Facebook page? And if anybody else has been in a similar boat, I would love to chat with you over coffee. But my plan for doing that is to pull them in through the paid space and then to keep them happy with the organic content matching what they saw in the paid world.
Hi there. A lot of the the measurement I'm interested in is also the nature of the content. So whether it be like what variable of multimedia, whether it be just text, text with photo, text with graphic, video, etc. Have you specifically excluded video or just from this presentation? And if you do video, what's the pecking order of success with regard to your content?
We do video. Video is the most successful. I'm not surprised to find video the most successful because Facebook blatantly says that they're tweaking their algorithm to carry video the most. Video doesn't convert well for us. So video gets huge engagement. People watch it, they get excited about it. I think it's a very top of the funnel for us, right? So it does a lot for brand awareness, it brings people into the fold. It doesn't tend to be the piece of content that delivers the qualified application. That's for us. I don't know that that's true for you, and that might be about the type of video. My hypothesis would be about the videos we made. I think if I made a very tactical video, like here are three tips, it would probably convert. I haven't made that video. Most of our videos explain who Teach for America is and what Teach for America does. So you could imagine that is exactly why that's very top of the funnel. I would imagine that video converts dramatically for other brands. It just does not convert for us. So I don't pay for it in the same way that I pay for the other ads. Great. Does that make sense? Yeah.
It does. Thank you.
All right, we got our last question over here.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I have a question. Do you work with a third-party vendor to place all these ads, or are you physically doing this yourself? And are you also placing ads in traditional non-social media outlets to get applications?
We do not work with third-party vendors. I do not place the ads myself. A wonderful gal named Antoinette on my team places all of the ads. I have a fairly big team at Teach for America. We have heavily invested in digital, and we have built basically our own in-house agency. And we are not placing ads in traditional media. We are relying on digital ads. We do, however, have a large group of people that help us recruit one-on-one. So it's not a full digital powerhouse in that regard. Did I answer your question? Yeah.
All right, let's hear it once again for Stacey. Thank you so much.